You don't have to raise your hand, but I want you just to think to yourself, if you're single or you're dating someone right now, you're thinking about being in a committed relationship, does this question of, does this person struggle with pornography or do they have any addictions, does that just make you nervous? Does it make you feel vulnerable? Do you wonder whether you could really ever know because it's so easy to hide? These are the kinds of questions that I get asked a lot. You know, a lot of people will come into my office and say, Jeff, how can I know? How can I know? I mean, with an alcoholic, you can smell it on their breath, or you see them stumbling around or whatever, but this seems like it's something that's so easy to hide. Well, it is. It's very easy to hide. But after today, I hope to give you some support and some help to know how to have conversations, how to observe, and how to be able to sense whether you're in a relationship with somebody who is really capable of being connected, who's capable of being healthy and turning away from things that would disconnect them. But first of all, I want you to think about when you feel vulnerable, it's like a little plant. You know, we just feel so careful that we don't want to ruin things. For you, what would keep you from bringing this up in a relationship? Do you worry that you might lose the relationship? Do you worry that they'll think something bad about you, that maybe you're paranoid or you're just high maintenance or you're difficult? Or maybe that you're even accusing them? There's a lot of fears. And I find that there's almost two kinds of people when it comes to this issue. There's some people that just barrel right into it and treat it like an interrogation. You know, they'll be in a relationship I've even had people ask on the first date, you know, so, do you have any issues with pornography? And of course, most people are going to be like, how do I even answer that? You know, I don't even know you. I have a right to some privacy. So there's a strong reaction for some people. But most people fall under the, I don't know what to talk about. I don't want to make it worse. I don't really know how to say anything. So let's just move on and maybe it'll go away or maybe I'll just discover it somehow. But I want you to look at this as an issue you can look at it sort of in the middle of being able to talk about it, but at the same time being respectful and honoring someone's natural sense of privacy. And so one thing about something that's new and fragile like this, it's like with a plant, this is an opportunity for growth. This is an opportunity for you to develop your own understanding of what's important to you as you have these conversations. Because you don't really learn a lot just by asking somebody a checklist question. You know, if you just ask somebody, so do you struggle with pornography? And they're like, no, I don't. Then you're like, okay, good. Let's just move on. You're not going to grow, and you're not going to clarify your own values and your own beliefs. You're not going to have any sort of a personal transformation and improvement, and neither is that person. But if you go about it the way we're going to talk about today, you'll be able to expand on all kinds of great areas in your relationship. So I want to move this beyond just the interrogation. And the other thing is that when things are uncomfortable or scary or new for us, we have a natural tendency to minimize or deny how important it is. So we have a tendency just to think, well, I'll get to that later, or it's probably not that big a deal. And so we have a tendency to sort of numb it out or minimize it. And I don't want you to be afraid. I want you to embrace this as an opportunity to connect, to grow, to communicate. And I'll be honest with you, the kind of person you're going to want to be with in a relationship is somebody who's good to have these kinds of conversations. You want to be in a relationship with somebody who's open to having these kinds of talks, not somebody who's going to dismiss you or criticize you or ignore you. That is not helpful, because then if you're not just talking about this issue, what about when you need to talk about other issues, like about concerns with family or children or in-laws or money? There's a need to be able to know that you're with somebody who can stay open, who can stay honest, curious, supportive. And so you'll get to practice this around this topic. This topic will help you jump into that and be able to practice this with this person. And so I want you to seize the opportunity, use it as a chance for personal growth and building a stronger relationship. Or if you'd rather just take the easy route, you can just hope that your father is a CIA operative like De Niro here, and you could just get a polygraph test. Some people believe that pornography can help them enhance their relationship or make up for deficits. A lot of people are sold the lie, a lot of young people are sold this lie that, that you're missing something, and the way to bring it back into your life is through pornography. So that's a message that comes through a lot of women's magazines as well. A lot of women are told in magazines that they need to be really sexual, that they need to be naughty, that they need to be adventurous, or guys need to learn how to be more sexual or how to like have sex or how it all is supposed to work by watching pornography so that they don't look like, you know, doofuses on their wedding night. I mean, there's just a lot of pressure to be sexual. There's a lot of pressure to know and be competent in this area. But I want to tell you that indulging in pornography, and I'm talking about stuff like Cosmo, women's magazines, media, other things like that, is all pornographic, in my opinion. It sells the idea that you have to be a sexual person to be enough. All of that is a lie, and it will miseducate you and make the focus be on bodies and on sexuality when really healthy relationships are built on so much more than that. In The Wizard of Oz, for those of you who know the story, in The Wizard of Oz, this group of people, Dorothy and her other characters, her other friends, are going down the yellow brick road, and they're going to Oz, the Great Oz, to find something that they feel like they don't have. I want to find a brain. I want to find courage. I want to get my heart. Well, you know the story. When they get to Oz, and they go behind the curtain, and Toto accidentally pulls the curtain back, they discover that Oz is just a little insecure guy on a platform pushing a bunch of buttons. And in reality, he's just as insecure as they are. In my experience in working with people who have struggled with pornography and even women who have bought into a lot of these media ideals, a lot of them feel like they're missing something that thing has. And the reality is that just like Dorothy and her friends had everything they needed. They had courage, they had heart, they had a brain, because that's how they got to Oz in the first place. They already had everything they needed, and that was the big revelation. And it was Oz who was the big poser. It was Oz who needed all of what they had. And it's the same with pornography and these lies in the media. You have something they don't have. You have an understanding of the purpose of your body. You have an understanding of relationships, of self-control. All of those things that the Kite Sisters talked about so beautifully are all things that you already possess or you can develop to build a healthy relationship with somebody. You don't need to get it from pornography. And so as you're going throughout your relationships and you might feel tempted or pulled to look into that as a way to help you or prepare you, I want you to trust and slow down and recognize that you have what it takes already. You have, people have been building good relationships for eons without any of this, without having to change their bodies or having to become something they're not. And that is a powerful truth I want you to embrace. So just as a side note, for those of you who might be taking notes or wanting to take pictures of my slides, all of this will be available with all my notes, all my presenter notes, online on my website in a PDF, so that you don't have to stress out about copying it all down, because I'll be showing some other stuff that has a lot more words on it. So I'll show you the link for that at the end of the presentation so you can download that. Before I jump to that, I want to now pull back the curtain a little bit, right? I want to expose this insecure old man on the platform. I want you to understand some truths about pornography that will help set you up for a healthy relationship. First truth, these all come from Matt Fratt at The Porn Effect. If you're on Instagram, social media, I'd encourage you to follow him. His stuff is really good. The first truth, pornography teaches men that sex is something to be taken from women. So what that basically means is that in pornography, the product is the body, the product is the person, the product is the sexual act. And you are the consumer of it. So you consume it, and you know, it's all mostly free. You don't really pay for it. but you're consuming it. It's one direction. You're not having to give anything at all. You're just taking. And so people that struggle with pornography are, in a sense, takers. They're not givers. Healthy relationships are based on giving and taking. And so you do not want to be in a relationship with somebody who's a taker. You want to be in a relationship with somebody who is a giver and also can take, because, you know, you don't want to always just be giving. It has to go both ways. And so one thing about pornography is that, think of it as like a training. Have you ever, you know, done drills in sports where you're developing reflexes so that you don't have to think about it in the moment, right, in the game? You just need to know how to be able to shoot or dribble or run or block. You just need to know how to do that, and you do it through drills, through repetition. The brain is a very, very powerful sponge. It'll learn and adapt and grow new pathways and develop reflexes, so you don't have to think about it. Well, if you've spent a lot of your life looking at pornography, you're developing reflexes and beliefs about bodies, about women, about men, and this is one of the reflexes, is that you're going to take something from another person. So, for example, a lot of girls get pressured to send pictures of themselves in their underwear or nude to boys. Guys will be like, send me a pic, whatever, right? Well, that's taking. That's basically saying, you give me something that I'll consume. That's not a good start for a relationship. That's somebody who's internalized that belief that women are consumables. That's different to me than having a guy send you a text that says, tell me how your day was, how are you feeling? Those are very different. That's a giver. That's somebody who's wanting to connect. Here's another truth. We were made to love people, not consume them. That's a build on to what I was just talking about. So you want to look for patterns in relationship with this person that you're in a relationship with. Are they able to give and to love and to connect to other people? Or are they just constantly consuming? One of my biggest issues with the selfie, and not just because I'm 41 years old. And so I think most people think that older folks just hate selfies for that reason, just because it's new. No. One of the biggest reasons I have an issue with selfies is because it's basically saying, hey, consume me. Look at me. Like, I'm an object to be consumed. It's so centered on me and building my, like, so I'm counting likes, I'm looking, I'm trying to see, am I getting consumed enough? Am I getting enough attention? The research on people that take a lot of selfies show that they're actually higher in anxiety and depression because they're constantly worried about how they're being viewed. That's that consuming mentality. I'd much rather have you flip the camera around and take pictures of things that you love or of people you love, or take a picture with you and them together and showing a connection versus just constantly focusing on being consumed or consuming others. The problem with pornography is that it's not that it shows too much, it's that it shows too little. It takes the complexity of human beings and reduces them to mere body parts. Humans are so complex and so beautiful. There's so much to us. And to be reduced down to just a collection of body parts really strips us of our humanity. And so when you're thinking about being in a relationship with somebody, you want to be in a relationship with somebody who is open to all of you, not just wanting your body. Pornography teaches people who view it to just be focused on parts, to break somebody down into their parts. Real relationships are about all of you. Your likes, your dislikes, your interests, your beliefs, your opinions, what you can do, who you are. And so that's what you want to do, is look for someone who's more interested in all of you versus parts of you. Okay. So a lot of times we talk about protecting children from pornography, and that makes good sense, and I'm a big fan of that. Children are vulnerable. They're impressionable. We got to protect them because they're developing ideas and beliefs and stuff. But when you think about marriage, I like to think of marriage as almost like a child. It's like a separate thing that needs to be protected too. Marriages are very fragile, and they can be damaged so easily. One person compared it to a spider web, that you can wipe away a spider web so quickly, but it takes a long time to build one. And they're intricate, they're delicate. And secrets and pornography and just all that darkness can damage a relationship. So as you're thinking about how do I want to address this in my future relationships, I want you to think about it from the kind of the warrior protective of a child type of energy. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure this fragile thing doesn't get hurt by secrets and by damage from pornography. So did you know that in relationships, now I'm speaking to men and women, women can become addicted to pornography too. But a lot of the research has been done is on the effect it has on women, because by and large, women experience betrayal from pornography and other sexual acting out differently than men experience it when their wives do it. The research shows that women tend to be more traumatized by it. Most women meet the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. Half of those women, it's severe. There's more isolation. They're more depressed and anxious. They're more likely to have suicidal thoughts, fear. There's more hypervigilance and policing behaviors, higher risk of self-blame. It even disrupts beliefs and worldviews. There's just a lot of challenges that come from this. And if these are things, as I'm reading this list, and you're going, man, that's pretty depressing, then I hope that that can motivate you to protect yourself from having to have those experiences. And you can do that by asking good questions. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But in marriage, the impact on marriage is really significant. Couples who struggle with this issue, there's more risk of divorce. There's more risk of adultery, 3 times the risk than couples who don't struggle with it. 4 times the risk of hiring a prostitute. Sex is viewed as something mechanical and emotionless. There's an increased risk in the home of exposing children to pornography. There's decreased trust, decreased desire to even have children or build a family, decreased spirituality. There's less respect for sacred aspects of life, increased risk of job loss. Men tend to be more chauvinistic, less progressive about women and women's roles. And so, again, what you're protecting is you're protecting the relationship from all of those things. And you can do a lot to protect it. All right, so the big question a lot of people have is, well, when do I bring this up? Well, again, like I said at the beginning, just because you've met somebody and you've started to talk with them and you have their ear, doesn't mean you have a right to drill them about their personal life. So people have a basic respect to privacy. If you were to come up to me and ask me all these personal questions, I probably wouldn't answer them because I don't know you. So you want to make sure that you're starting to have these conversations after there's been some trust established and there's been a nice connection made. So I don't know when that is, but it certainly needs to be before there's any major commitments in place. And by major commitments, I'm talking about engagement. Now, when my wife and I were dating back in the day, 1996 is when I met her, we knew that we were going to get married. We just had a sense. And so before I even popped the question, it was pretty obvious. You just know, unless you're in one of those YouTube fail videos where they get proposed to on national TV or in a stadium or something. You've seen some of those? Those people don't know. And they usually say no or walk out or run or whatever. So unless you're in that kind of a state where you just have no idea it's coming, then that's a different conversation. But you definitely need to talk about this as you sense things are starting to build and you're getting the sense, this is getting pretty serious. I think we might end up being more permanent. So to be more specific, if you're starting to spend a lot more time alone with each other, more exclusive, not dating other people anymore, starting to get a little physical, some kissing on the hand, stuff like that, you're talking about something that's a little more special than just some stranger you're starting to get to know. So you want to make sure that this is a relationship that feels pretty solid before you start venturing into this territory. Now, the other question is, well, what do we talk about? I'm not a big fan of the checklist. The checklist is really just about, you know, have you or haven't you? It's very narrow. And I've worked with lots of guys over the years that have struggled with addiction, pornography addiction, and most of those guys at some point can pass a checklist just fine. No, I don't look at pornography. Well, what does that mean? Because I've had some guys that say, no, I don't look at pornography. And she's like, okay. But the reality is, in his mind, the magical number was 3 months or something, right? Like, he thought, well, I haven't looked in 3 months, so I'm technically cleared of pornography issues, and I'm totally fine now. Not helpful, not accurate in terms of healing. Versus some guys that maybe don't have the perfect track record, but they're in the battle every day. They're in their hearts. They're trying to fight for their purity. They're trying to be honest. Those guys, in my opinion, are working towards something way healthier than a guy who's just trying to check off a list and say. So don't get caught up in checklists. I'm going to give you something better than that. You want to have what we call a values-based discussion. And basically what that means is it's a discussion that is so much bigger than just a behavior. A behavior may expose a value. For example, if I shove you and push you to the ground, you would probably get a pretty clear view on what my value is around respect, right? Which is, I don't respect you or people, probably. So you can observe people's behavior and start to put together what their values are. This is a much better way to understand this. And this conversation isn't something that you just go get a blanket and a picnic and go sit down and say, all right, we're going to have the discussion on values, or we're going to have the discussion on pornography. It's not like that. This conversation is one you're having all the time, in and out, observing, noticing, feeling. This is why it takes time, and this is why you don't want to just rush into a relationship before you've had adequate time to explore these things. And then you want to pay attention to the tone and the feeling. Everybody has an energy. If I'm standing next to you and I'm irritated, you're probably going to feel that, even if you don't even know me. But if I'm standing next to you and I'm in a really good place and I'm peaceful, you're going to feel that too. Well, so when you're talking about these things or observing your partner, what's the energy? What's the tone? What's the feeling? Because sometimes that may not match what they say. They may say, like, no, I'm happy. I'm good. I'm great. But inside you feel like they're just really intense or angry or something's off or it doesn't feel right. What you feel is just as important as what you hear. Okay? What you feel is just as important as what you hear. A lot of times we talk ourselves out of that because we think, no, I'm just being paranoid, or I'm just sensitive, or I'm just making it up, or whatever. My experience has been is that people that ignore their feelings are ignoring a huge source of data and good information. So make sure to pay attention to that. All right. You want to have somebody who's open. There's a big difference between being with somebody who's closed and somebody who's open. Somebody who's open, they feel like an open book. You know, they'll be the kind of person that, you know, when it's appropriate, you know, let's say after you're engaged or married or whatever, they could care less if you pick up their phone and look at it. They're not hiding anything from you. They're just open. They're just, you know, they're not guarded. They're not secretive. Versus somebody who's closed and they're like, well, why do you want to know that? You know, what are you going to do with that? That's somebody that's not very safe, okay? All right, so you don't need to write all this down. This is just the website. You can get this on my slides. I'll give you the website for it. But this is a great manual. If you go out to the SA Lifeline booth out there, they have these there. You can pick up a print version. I think she's charging $1 just for a copy. Pretty cheap. Or you can go get it for free on their website and print it out yourself. But that's a big manual that we helped write, and a lot of people contributed to expand this conversation on how to discuss this issue with someone you're dating. So it's way more information than we could ever cover in a workshop, but it's there. Let's talk about values. All right. So think about this pornography conversation as one conversation that's embedded in a bigger conversation about values. So if you think about all the values that affect pornography, it involves, right, like respect, love, kindness, fidelity, trust, right? These are all values. that are all connected to pornography use. So you're going to miss it if you just go into like, so do you have a problem with pornography, or have you ever had a problem with pornography? And they're just like, oh, no, I'm not. I don't have a problem. Or, oh, yeah, I used to when I was 20, but I'm good now. You're going to miss a values conversation just by trying to narrow in like that. So I want you to expand it, because pornography is really just a reflection of a bigger value system, a belief system. And you have to clarify your own values. Here's a way to do that. So even though I'm not going to have you do the exercise in here, just for time, I really want you to slow down and go through this exercise at home. It's 5 questions, 5 steps. So for example, what does respect mean to you? That's one value that I'll just pull out of the air. Why does it mean what it does? In other words, what or who has informed this view? So for example, where did that come from? Well, I grew up watching my dad be really respectful or disrespectful to me or my siblings or my mom or whatever, right? So you're gonna kind of get into the stories about why you care about this value so much. How do you want this value to influence your life and your actions? Is it that important to you? How will you integrate this into your own life? Are you a respectful person? How would someone be able to tell you are living this value? What would that look like? So you've got to get clear on this before you can start a conversation, because if you just get into a conversation about respect, but you've never thought through what that really means to you, then it's going to seem really out of place. You're not going to have any sense or a good read on whether or not this is something that they have, because you don't even know if you have it. And so if you think about all the values that are important to you, it'll make this conversation so much easier, and you'll see it everywhere. For example, give you a quick example. My wife's sister was dating a guy. One of her values is thoughtfulness. Now, my wife's sister is one of the most thoughtful people I've ever met. She's great to have as a sister-in-law because she's so aware, so considerate. She noticed that this guy she was dating, when they'd go to the grocery store, and some of you have probably done this, I have, but this was a pattern for him, he would take something out of his cart that he didn't want anymore and do what? Just put it where it didn't go, right? Guilty, anybody, right? So he would do that. You know, he'd put the box of cereal over by the milk or whatever, and it doesn't go. But what was the attitude of that? What was the belief system that he was revealing there? Right? I don't respect or care about other people because that's just their job. They'll take care of it. He was a taker. He was selfish. She started to notice this pattern because it bugged her. I'm somebody who's thoughtful and will put things back where they go because that's extra work for them that they don't need to worry about. For him? And so she started to then see this and notice that it was a pattern everywhere else in his life, even with her. She didn't marry the guy. She broke up with him. And not just because he didn't put things back where they belonged, but because it revealed a value system that was so different than hers. And she's married to a very thoughtful person because that was important to her. So discover those values. So when you're talking about, well, how do I get into this conversation? How do I start addressing this with somebody? How do I, you know, bring this up? Well, it's everywhere. So for example, you could be watching a television show or a movie, and do they look away? Do they choose and watch movies that have inappropriate stuff in it? Do they seem to like not be bothered by it? Is it something that for them is just no big deal? Do they consume tons of media? That's revealing their value system. You almost don't even have to ask that question. You can just see it. But you might even ask them, well, what are their standards? What are their values around media? What are their beliefs on human sexuality? Again, if they're asking you to send pictures of yourself, they probably have a taker view of sex or a body-focused view. Are they just so focused on parts? Are they trying to just touch you all the time and just make it all about physical touch? Do they have beliefs about men and women that are unhealthy? You know, these are all values. These are all things you can observe all the time. These are things that are going on in front of you every day in the relationship, and you can ask questions around this to clarify. You know, is it still okay to ask a direct question like, have you ever struggled with pornography? Sure, that's fine. But it's going to sound weird if you've never talked about any of this other stuff. It's going to sound out of place. And so if you're talking about your values in this bigger way and you've clarified that, then the bigger conversation on pornography is going to be really easy to have. It's almost like the way you talk with kids about pornography. With my kids, I started talking with them about modesty around covering their bodies when they were 2 and 3 years old. We talk about the body being private, that we need to give people privacy when they take off their clothes. So then, when they got older, it was easier to talk about pornography because it's pictures of people taking off their clothes. And why, we're not going to look at that. We're going to give them privacy and teach them some respect. So when you're talking about values in all these bigger ways like this, it's so much easier to bring up your needs and your concerns in these ways. And you'll be able to tell pretty quickly whether they share those values or not. Okay. So this is a pretty important point here that I want to make sure we spend some time on. This is about the quality of somebody who has struggled with this. So if you discover that the person you're with has viewed pornography, and the research shows that 90% of boys under the age of 17 have seen pornography, that doesn't mean they're addicted to it. It just means they've seen it. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a fair game conversation for any relationship, because chances are, there's been exposure to pornography. And you got to understand, what have they done with it, right? Have they struggled with it? And if they have, are they just sober or are they in recovery? So they're very different. Let me give you the differences here. In my experience, working with people that struggle with addictions to pornography, worked with hundreds, maybe thousands, I don't know, I don't count, but this is what I've observed. People that only focus on stopping their behavior, that's what sobriety is. Sobriety is saying, I don't look anymore. That actually is fairly easy to do. It usually just takes a few months, 6 months, 3 months to stop. But then what do you do after that? It's kind of like after you put out the fire, you just live in a big heap of rubble? Or do you go in there and start cleaning things up, pulling out the carpet, maybe replacing some drywall, trying to heal and fix this environment? People that stop pornography addiction and don't do anything beyond that, beyond just stopping, are like basically living with something that's just kind of burned up and doesn't really work like it's supposed to. There's something missing inside. So you'll find out if somebody's just sober only if they're defensive when you bring this up. They don't want to talk about it. They just minimize it, just want it to go away. They have no real insight about how they got to that place. Oh, I just stopped. I got over it, outgrew it, whatever. They're overly optimistic about their future success. Oh, yeah, this will never be a problem for me, man. I had a bad experience. I got caught when I was 17, and, man, I'm done with that, Overly optimistic. They have no realistic sense of what it takes to do this long term. There's kind of a shallowness to them. There's some fear, some energy around it. Like, why do you want to talk about that? And they're really just kind of disconnected. I mean, I believe pornography strips a man and women, but I speak a lot about men, strips somebody of their heart. And the heart is the center of everything. And when you lose your heart, you lose your ability to feel pain, to feel joy, to feel connected, to care, empathy. So if you feel like there's something missing there, even though they're telling you everything's great, you gotta pay attention to that. Again, trust your feelings on that. Recovery, on the other hand, is totally different. Recovery is a whole new view of yourself, a whole new view of God, a whole new view of others. It's like a rebirth. People that are in recovery are realistic. They recognize that this isn't just go away magically by, setting some date or having some sort of, major intervention or something. They recognize realistically that long term, this is something they're going to need to be aware of. They're accountable, and they're accountable for life. They don't have an expiration date on how long they're accountable. They recognize that they've got to be honest with themselves and with others. There's a depth to them. There's a calmness to them. They're proactive. They're out seeking help, reading books, learning about this, trying to get help for it. They're kind. They're compassionate. They have empathy. And they have standards, and they'll keep your standards, right? They're going to respect any boundaries you have. They're not going to push your limits or make you have to stop them. People that are in recovery just feel different than people who are not in recovery. That's a promise. So that's why I put a picture of somebody hanging on for dear life. That's not somebody you want to be in a relationship with. They're hanging on for dear life. They're not doing their work. So how do you know? I love what Brené Brown says. You either walk inside your story and you own it, or you stand outside your story and hustle for your worthiness. What does that mean? If I'm owning my story, what I'm doing is I'm saying, you know what? I haven't been perfect. I'm struggling, or I haven't done that great, but I'm going to own it and be honest about it. I'm not going to hide it from you. But if I'm the other guy, I'm going to be on the outside of my story, getting away from it as far as I can, and trying to hustle around and prove to you why I'm a good person and be defensive about it. So the more questions you ask, the more you try and clarify things or understand what's going on or who this person is, if they're blocking and hiding stuff and you feel like they're not really owning their story, then that's somebody who probably is not going to be safe to be in a relationship with. Because they're so focused on protecting the self that everything else kind of gets split off. This chart is in the handout that you can get from SA Lifeline, but I just put it up here just to show you that there's a great chart in there comparing healthy relationships to toxic relationships. It's good to know the difference. It's good to know if you're in a relationship with somebody who's healthy and working to be a better person, or somebody who's really closed and more selfish and a consumer and just a taker. So you want to make sure that you understand the difference between those two. So let's say that you do discover that you're in a relationship with somebody and they do have a problem with pornography or have had a problem with it. Well, you've got to slow things down. You've got to make sure that you're not just going along at the same pace. It's like if the check engine light comes on your car and you hear a weird noise, you don't just keep burning down the interstate at 80 miles an hour. You pull over, you pop the hood, you slow down, you call for some help, you try and understand what's going on. You want to avoid any kind of commitments or compromises. Let's say you're engaged and this comes out or you discover this. You got to pull back, maybe put it off a while or even break the engagement. There's nothing wrong with that. And keep developing the other areas of the relationship. There's nothing wrong with having good, clean fun with somebody. It's not, again, it's not marriage. So you can still be with them and enjoy the relationship, but be clear on who's responsible for what. What does that mean? Well, a lot of the times, when somebody discovers that there's a problem or a struggle, the other partner who doesn't have the problem sometimes feels like they need to take this on as a project. Well, let me buy you some books, or let's go talk with the so-and-so, or let's make sure, and I'll check on you. I can call you every night, make sure you're doing good. Or you got to make sure that they're responsible for their behavior, and they're taking charge of it. Because if they're not proactive about it, and they need you to be the therapist or the babysitter or the accountability person, then they're never going to heal, and you're going to resent them. And ultimately, they're never going to get better. And so be clear on who does what. And then, of course, identify that you are allowed to have a limit. For some women that I've worked with and some men, they discover that their partner has addictions or a history of it or struggles with it, and for them it's a deal breaker. They're like, nope, I'm done, I'm out. I don't judge that at all. My experience has been is that most people, if they're honest about it and they're working through it and they're trying to work hard, most people can stay and work through it together. That's the majority. But you don't have to. But you also may have a line that says, if you stop working on it while we're together, then I'm out. I'm not going to do this anymore. So you decide where that line is for you. And then make sure at least there's a year of sobriety. The brain has to have time to heal and unscramble and slow down. There's a tendency to want to, you know, just shortcut this or, you know, make up some magical numbers. The brain takes time to heal from this. And not just the brain, but the beliefs and the attitudes and the values all have to shift, and that takes time. And so if you discover something like this and this person is someone you still want to build a relationship with, slow it down and encourage long-term sobriety. That's so important. A couple more charts really quickly that are in the packet. There's a chart in there about, am I serious about working on this issue? You want to know to compare someone who's serious about getting better versus someone who's not. And then for you, if you're the person who doesn't struggle but you discover this, you need to also understand how you're responding. Are you responding in a healthy way or are you responding in an unhealthy way? All of that's in the packet that you can get from SA Lifeline. It's a great resource. I'm going to skip that part. Your decision to have these conversations will open up so much for you personally and relationally. It'll start a ripple effect that will affect your children, your future children, your community. It's just so important to build a strong, stable marriage and not try and just do this halfway or just hope and cross your fingers it gets better. These discussions are engaging. They're really important, and you don't have to be afraid of them. And as long as you're talking about this and there's an expectation that we talk about these things in this kind of relationship and you've got somebody who's good to go with that, things will probably be okay as you work things out like that. You can download the slides that I just showed you with all my notes at this website. And if you have questions or you have comments and you want to, you know, jump on the website, there's a contact form. It goes right to my email address. You can just send me an email and add anything that maybe I forgot. Maybe there's a circumstance that you have a question about. I realize that this is very personal and not everybody's in the same situation, but I hopefully you've been able to hear some principles and ideas that will help you navigate this uncertain terrain a little bit better. So thank you so much for being here.